Going through this journey was a total faith endeavor for us. I've always brought God into what I'm doing, but instead of God being a part of our plan in our life, we're actually being a part of God's plan.
I heard God as clear as day say, "I am proud of you. I am the daughter of an amazing father, and he has great, great plans in store for me."
Losing my daughter, I would have never guessed that I'd be where I'm at now, that I would be in such a relationship with God, and that I'd be singing His praises.
When I started the Brave journey, I was looking for all the ways that I could control my safety. I had no clue that this is where God was going to bring me to my knees. Safety is just a limit to possibility.
Stand up and sing with us. Nothing can tear us from. Nothing can tear us from. His mighty love. We've only glimpsed His vast affection, the whispers of His heart and passion, His pouring death. His love is deep, His love is wide, and it covers us. His love is fierce, His love is strong, His glory.
Love is strong, it is furious. His love is sweet, His love is wild, and it's waking hearts to life. Sing of His love. His love is deep, His love is wide, and it covers us. His love is fierce, His love is strong, it is furious. His love is sweet, His love is wild, and it's waking hearts. Waking hearts to life. is fierce, his love is strong, it is furious. His love is sweet, his love is wild, and it's waking hearts tonight.
Who breaks the power of sin in dying days? Who's I have heard of the majesty and wonder of you, King of heaven. In humility I bow, as your love in wave after wave crashes over me, crashes over.
We thank you that you have made a way for each of us to come to you and encounter you for who you are, and to hear from you who you say we are. There's nothing that would that we'd like more than to hear you speak to us from the inside out in a way that that would cause us to change the way that we see ourselves and the way we see the world. Let's sing this prayer together that just says, I will listen for the Lord, all right?
Listen for the Lord.
God, if we haven't already, we would like to hear from you today. We'd like you to not just hear our voices or our hearts as we sang those songs, but we also like to know if you've got something you want us to hear. We'd like to sense your presence today, even to greater degrees. And we want to honor you in all that has continued to be said and sung. So thank you for being a great God who gives us adventure, who calls us out from our normal lives, and help us to see you as the God of adventure today. Thank you, God. May my words, most importantly, be in alignment with your heart and your truth. And I pray these things according to the person and identity of Jesus. Amen. Man, good stuff. Hey, let's thank these guys for leading us well today. And before you sit down, why don't you turn around, find somebody, say hello to them, find their name, and tell them how long you've been at Crossroads. If it's been a week or 15 years, give me your name and say, hey, how long? Well, do we all have a good Easter weekend? Man, you know, I don't know how many of us got to eat chocolate bunnies last week. You know, starting off, biting off the ears. Every red-blooded American always starts by biting off the bunny's ears. And if you're like me, you work on all the appendages all around the edge. You nibble off his toes, his tail. I have a little story on bunnies coming up in just a moment. But I want to make sure we understand what we're doing today. Today is the start of the most important series we do every year. Every year we have one series that we hone in on what we think is the most important spiritual topic for all of us to go through and grow through. And in that topic, we bring a multi-pronged approach that we normally don't bring to our other services. We make sure all of our children's kids club curriculum is lined up with it. We make sure CSM, our student ministry stuff, is doing the same exact stuff. We create stuff that you can do at home, on your computer, in your own house, that's growing you in that topic at the same time. We make it easy and create small group curriculum to coalesce around other people and talk about that topic for the next 5 weeks. We have a multi-sensory prayer experience that's going to be amazing that we do to connect with God. And we do all of this stuff so that we can all center down and hunker down in an area that we believe that we need to take new territory on. And this year, that topic is bravery. Now, if you've been around for more than a year going, wait a minute, bravery? Didn't we do that last year? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. But this is new content, new sermons I'm giving for this series, new stuff we've added to it. And it's not because we want to repeat something. A lot of work has gone into this. It's because we didn't get brave enough. It's because no matter what you're going to do in life, no matter what new area you're going to take, no matter how much you're going to grow closer and closer to God, one thing that's always true is the next step, the first step, always requires bravery because it gets us out of our comfort zone. It gets us out of our same old, same old. And so this is the constant tension point. This is the constant linchpin or the bottleneck to spiritual growth, to personal growth, to relationship with God, is taking a step that we don't want to take, even though we believe it may be the right step to take. Now, the story I'm going to look at today is one I'm pretty excited to look at today. It's a very first Bible story that ever came alive to me. I grew up in church. I went to church all the time. My parents forced me to go to Sunday school, and I had a lot of sort of church knowledge and Bible story knowledge, and that was all fine. But it wasn't until I was in high school that I went to a meeting, and I wasn't even expecting the Bible to be talked about, and someone talked about the story I'm going to spend the rest of our time talking about, and it really rocked my world. It was massive. The first time I was like, oh my gosh, this is life-changing. I've never actually gone and done a deep dive on this story at Crossroads before like I want to today. It's a story of Peter walking on water, and it's a story of bravery. Bravery is linked to adventure, and God is a God of adventure. God wants to encourage us to take risks. He wants to encourage us to go to new places, and that will always require bravery. Eileen Guter says this, "You can live on bland food so as to avoid an ulcer, drink no tea, coffee, or other stimulants in the name of health, go to bed early, stay away from nightlife, avoid all controversial subjects so as to never give offense, mind your own business, avoid involvement in other people's problems, spend money only on necessities, and save all you can, and you can still break your neck in the bathtub and it will serve you right." Jesus is calling you to adventure. He is not the God of same old, same old. His main point is not to get you to obey the Ten Commandments. That's fine, but that's a good idea. But his primary goal for you is not to hunker down and just be a nicer person and to be a more moral person. He's calling you and inviting you to go beyond where you are in a life of adventure. That's why he's given us free will. That's why we have free understanding. That's why we have the ability to imagine things. And this story, for me, illustrates it really well. It's in the book of Matthew, chapter 14, 25 and following, that I'll read, and it says this. "In the fourth watch of the night, he came to them," this is Jesus, "came to them, the disciples," the 12 disciples, "walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, 'It's a ghost!' And they cried out in fear. But immediately, Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid.'" Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. The heart is known as, in the ancient world, as the center of our being. It's the thing that holds us together. It's the seat of our soul, the seat of our emotions, our processing. It's just the center of everything. And Jesus says, you've lost your center. You've lost your center. Some of us in here feel that way right now. You feel like life is getting away from you. Life is getting too hectic, or life is getting too confusing, or you're confused about where to go. You're losing your center. And Jesus would say to you, take heart. Take heart. It is him, and he is near. Now, when we look at this story, there's different lenses to look at it through. The Bible oftentimes gets accused of being a book of contradictions, and this is just not true. But one of the reasons it's accused of being that way is because different people will have different perspectives on a same story, and they will add details that the other one doesn't add. And most of the time, these sync up really, really well. And it's good sometimes to look at different perspectives. And so I'll read just a sentence from Mark's perspective in the Gospel of Mark in the New Testament, and it adds this little editorial detail. "And about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them," all that's identical, but here it is, "walking on the sea, he meant to pass them by." He meant to pass them by. What does that mean there? He came to this place because he saw they were in trouble. He meant to have an interaction or an altercation, depending on how you look at it. And yet it says he meant to pass them by. What does that mean, he meant to pass them by? Now, at this point, we've got to just try to work a little bit to figure out what's going on here. I'll give you my opinion. There's a couple options here, or a combination thereof. The first option I kind of like the most, it's that Jesus is really like me, because he's coming to freak them out. I like that. He's coming to do a little scare on them, and he's just getting some sort of joy about this. I like this whenever I find out that Jesus is just like me and my quirks. I think there's something going on here. He meant to pass them by. It's kind of like he comes on them. He's like, "Hey, guys, look at me." Like, oh, he's doing the moonwalk for them. He's going on. I don't know what he's doing, but it's like he meant to freak them out. I get joy at that. I shouldn't, but I do. Staff members will talk about me liking to scare people, sneaking up on them. And when I was dating Lib, one of my early dates, I walked up onto the back porch and was going to knock on the door. And while I was going there, I was listening to, either that day or not too long earlier, an old stand-up routine by Eddie Murphy, where he talks about anything that is dead in the neighborhood, the boys would all take something and touch it, and then that would have cooties, and they would tease the girls with it. So he talks about like a bird, you touch it with a stick, and then he goes, "Dead bird. Gonna put it on you." I thought that was great. So I come up on the back porch, and there's a bunny rabbit that's torn in half, that her, one of her, one of her cats did it. She had two cats. So obviously, they had a hunt. They wanted to show off their kill, and they had put it right there in the back. And the little bunny rabbit is like, his paws and ears going, and here it was. So I knocked on the door, and she comes and says, "Hey, let me take care of this for you." And it's fine. So I take a paper towel, and I pick it up, and I don't remember if I threw it over the hill or if I threw it in the garbage. All I remember is once I did that, I had this like paper towel that had just touched this dead object. I'm like, ooh. Dead bunny. I just want to see if it were, dead bunny. Stop. Dead bunny. Gonna put it on you. Stop. Gonna back it around the corner. Stop. It was awesome. And then she broke up with me. It was great. It was really good stuff. I don't know if Jesus is that level of prankster, but I think there's something going on here with him sort of having some fun with the situation. That's one option. Another option or combination of it is he is looking to see if they'll stop him. He meant to pass them by because he's wondering if they're going to call out to them and initiate a contact. If the disciples, his 12 followers, are going to get engaged and call out to him. There's really something here. You know, a lot of us feel like God is absent from us. We feel like God's given up on us. We feel like we're not sensing this. We've got a problem that's not being solved. We've got an issue that isn't being handled. And we think that if God was really love, he would handle that issue. He would take away this pain. He would take away this problem. And we're just sort of waiting for that to happen. And we're not doing anything. We're just waiting for that to happen. We look at the pain in our city and we think, oh, gosh, there's so much. God, where are you? Where are you? And there's some valid reason for questioning God in the midst of all that stuff. But have you ever considered that if Jesus did come to Cincinnati or whatever city that you reside in, have you ever considered that he wouldn't make a beeline to the hospital and walk up and down all of the halls and just heal people? He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do it because he didn't do that when he was on the earth. He's not just kind of a one-man vigilante looking to proactively go out and stop problems and stop people's issues. It's interesting, if you read the book of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the first four books of the New Testament where the teachings and the miracles of Jesus are, you'll find, at least I found this in looking at this not too long ago, I found 41 recorded instances of healings where Jesus would heal somebody. 41. Of the 41, 34 of the 41 accounts only start because someone asks him. Someone else initiates contact, initiates the conversation, and then the healing takes place. Of the other seven, most of the other seven, someone still has to do something like go down and, you know, wash themselves off on the water side or something like that. So over and over and over and over and over again, if you want God to get involved in your life, you've got to get involved in God's life. Over and over and over again, if you want something different for God to do in your life, you have to take the first step. You have to be the initiator. I don't know why that is. Is God looking to see who really wants it? Is God looking to see who has a level of assertion and aggression in their lives, and that's who he wants to get behind? Is God? I don't know what it is. All I know is this, that first step is always the hardest. That first step is always the act of bravery. We never need to be brave when we're doing something we've done before. We never need bravery when we're doing the same old, same old. We never need bravery when we're doing what everybody else is doing, because then there's standard systems and processes there. So Peter sees him passing by, and Peter does a brave thing. He's the one who initiates contact and says this. And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." Peter's going, "I can't be certain this is you, Jesus. I mean, it's night, fourth watch of the night. We got wind and waves and sea spray everywhere. But if it is you, I want a little validation. Invite me to come. Invite me to leave this boat right now." Now, what does the boat represent? The boat represents same old, same old. That's where Peter's been. He's a fisherman. He has a fishing business. The boat represents your place of comfort and my place of comfort. The boat represents the place where everybody else is. The boat represents the 50th percentile. The boat represents mediocrity. The boat represents where human will and human intellect would have us hunker down. And Peter and all of his friends, they're hunkered down in their boat, in their way of thinking, just like you and I are. You and I hunker down in our philosophy. You and I hunker down in our worldview. You and I hunker down in our predictable patterns. You and I hunker down in our political philosophies. You and I hunker down in the established practices that have gotten us to where we are right now or have not given us more pain than we have right now. We hunker down in the relationships we've had. We just like to, we just hunker down. And Peter and the disciples are hunkered down in their boat of mediocrity. A friend of mine and a great author, his name is John Ortberg. He wrote a book on this. If you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. And he teases out really, really well how it's interesting how we don't want to get out of the boat because we don't want to leave our comfort. We don't want to leave our security. And he goes in this riff about, what's our favorite chair in America? The lazy boy. That's right, the lazy boy. We just want to sit in the lazy boy and go, there's a reason it's called lazy boy, because that's what we want. We want laziness. We want mellowness. We want sereneness. Lazy, but they don't call it no one's going to buy any chair called the risky boy. Or adventurer boy. No one's going to do that. But man, the lazy boy, whew, that is so good. The reason we don't grow more than we do, the reason we don't see more of God, the more we don't sense more accomplishments, the reason why we're not seeing substantive change happening in our relationship with God and others and our economics and our occupation, the reason is we don't want to change. We don't want to do something different. We see something we might want. We want that new job. We want to start a new business. We want to start a new relationship. We see something like out there that we want, but the first step to get to there always makes it worse. It's always worse. Like, if we could have that thing out there, then it'd be better. But this first thing, life is always worse because we're uncomfortable. We're not getting the benefits of engaging that thing yet. It's always, always difficult. Man, over the years, I've interacted with a lot of people, whether in a counseling environment or friends of mine or people I bump into, and, you know, I hear problems or I hear challenges or I hear things that people are frustrated with. And so frequently when I hear something, it's very obvious to me, just as an objective guy on the outside, that, okay, gosh, if you want that, you've got to do this. You got to do this. Like, if you want to have more resources to manage and to deal with, you have to work hard. You have to put in longer hours at work, or you have to get a different job. Of course, that's always going to make your life immediately worse. But if you want that, if you're feeling God not being close in your life, I'm pretty sure it's because you've got this area of sin in your life and you're not handling it and you've got to get rid of it. And until you do, you're not going to sense God's, you want to get married and yet you've been living with somebody for 2 years and they're not going to marry you and you've got to end it. You got to end it. Or if you want, I could go on and on and on about different things, right? And what happens is when we talk that first step is always worse. And what's paired back is this phrase, and we've all said it or we've all heard it. It's like, but doesn't God want me to be happy? But doesn't God want me to be happy? Because the implication is, and the realization is, if I start walking away, I will not be happy. This will not make my life any better right now. Doesn't God want me to be happy? Of course, the answer to that is no, he does not want you to be happy. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but guess what? God's agenda doesn't revolve around your happiness. God's hopes and purposes and dreams for the world, for what he's doing, and for your life don't revolve around you being in an emotionally stable, happy place right now. I'm sorry, you're not that important to God. He's not about you being happy. He's about you being holy. Now, what does this mean? This means not, he's about you being morally stringent and morally pure. He likes that. He likes that. That's not really the idea of holiness. It's not about that. Holiness comes from the ancient Hebrew word kadosh, which means set apart, distinct. That's what holiness means, set apart. So when the Bible says that God is holy, it really means he's not us. He's in an utter different category. And so when he also says, and you should be holy, what that means is you and I should be set apart. We should be distinct. We shouldn't be in the 50th percentile. We shouldn't be in we shouldn't be in the same boat as everybody else. Peter, when he steps out of the boat, he is not happy at all. This takes an act of bravery, and at the same time, he is setting himself apart from the other 11. He is setting himself apart. He is distancing himself from what normal people would do because he wants an experience with God right now. He gets out of the boat because Jesus is out of the boat. Jesus, God, isn't in the boat. God isn't in the same old, same old. God isn't in the safety place. If you want to not speak up in a difficult situation, guess what? You're in the boat with all the other weenies you aren't speaking up. God speaks up. You got to get out and speak up. And so Peter gets out and speaks up. The second big idea is this. Bravery requires community. Requires community. We have to have people around us. We'll never have the majority of people around us because if you're going to be brave, if you're going to go the way of God, if you're going to go after things that you're not going after right now, you'll always be in the minority. Always will be. Because the majority really doesn't want God. The majority really just wants to keep doing the same old, same old. And God's calling you to a new adventure. And so you will always be in the minority. But what we need is we still need a community or people who are around us who get us and get God enough to encourage us and push us. We're going to take a look at one person's story of just that from last year's Brave and why he's doing Brave again. As we take a look at his story, I'll let you know we're also going to have the opportunity to be generous, to support the journey here and the things that are happening in people's lives in Cincinnati, outside of Cincinnati, around the globe. If you're new today, hey man, we're excited to serve you today. No expectations on you at all. If you're a crossroads anywhere or crossroads wherever you are right now, you can drop something in a bag. Actually, you can't in a bag if you're crossroads anywhere. But you can do crossroads.net/give. And let's listen to Mitch's story.
Last year when I entered into the Brave Journey, I was seeking some sort of adventure, not sure of what it was. I didn't necessarily know what I was expecting God to do, but that he was going to lead me to something big. I thought I was going to be in another city. I had no clue that I would be jobless. I had no clue that this is where God was going to bring me to my knees and have my hands open to say, all right, I'm going to do this. I was happy in my job. I knew what I was going to need to do to have success. The work that I was doing was not fulfilling me, and I felt God calling me to change that, to bring something new to Cincinnati, and Breakout Cincinnati started. I took the leap of quitting my job around the end of when Brave actually finished. At the time, we had not created an agreement for Breakout Cincinnati, but I felt God clearly say, this is what I want you to do. So he definitely led me into a posture of, you just need to have your hands open and I'm going to show you what I can do as long as you trust me. Yeah, I definitely received advice from people. Everybody seemed to have their own opinions, from old bosses to friends to family members that didn't quite understand what an entertainment business could do or why it was needed or how God was speaking to me about this. But at the end of the day, I had to realize that God's voice was more powerful. Before the Brave Journey, I was looking for all the ways that I could control my safety and all the ways that I could live a comfortable life, all the while doing good deeds on the side. And now I would say that God has taught me that safety is just a limit to possibility and that God keeps his promises and continues to come alongside us. God is a God who keeps his promises, and because of that, I am brave.
Isn't that neat? A lot of us have heard of that breakout game where you go and you pay and you have a mystery to solve. Like, how many of us ever heard of that breakout thing or done that? That came because he went through Brave. That's necessarily dummy proof. That's in Cincinnati because that guy went through Brave and was brave. That's why that's, and he's doing it again because there's new things in his life and a new thing he needs to do to be part of a different group. See, Peter is the only one who sort of steps out and goes, I wonder what the other people's excuse was. In fact, there's probably not a single person who can hear me right now who hasn't heard of the Apostle Peter. We've heard of Peter, right? The average person here couldn't name six other disciples. The average person couldn't name seven, couldn't name eight. You might get James, you might get John, Judas, that loser, that rat bastard. Of course, I understand that guy, but you know, beyond that, there's probably... And what's the difference between Peter and the rest of those guys? It's that Peter steps out. It's that Peter moves. And we don't know what these other guys are doing. I mean, maybe they had reasons. They're lame reasons. I know that you're going to be thinking, oh, I don't want to do the small group thing. The small group thing is too much. I don't need community going down. I'm telling you right now, you do. There's a very clear line. People who are going to get a lot out of this journey and people are just going to have a nice experience. Everyone who gets a lot out of this journey, every single one, will be in a small group. Every single one. I'm not guaranteeing you if you're in a small group, it will be great, but I am guaranteeing you if you're not in a small group, you will not change the degree that you could. I just know that. This is period. And I know right now all the reasons, all the excuses, like, oh man, I can't. And they're the kind of excuses that the disciples would have had in the boat. Peter's on his way out, and he goes up, and he, if it's you, call me to come to you. And okay, come. So he gets up and grabs on the thing, and he's like, putting it on. He's getting this other one here. Oh, jeez, I'm holding it. The rest of them back there and going, and John said, well, I would go, but I don't have insurance that covers water damage. And Andrew said, well, I would get in a small group, but I can't find a babysitter. And James said, well, it's just not one of my priorities right now. And we go on and on and on. The fact of the matter is, Peter had a profound experience. We're talking about him because he was the one who was adventuresome. He was the one who was brave. One of the things that keeps my trust in the Bible at a high level is just reading it. You just read it and like, oh man, that's good stuff. That's helpful. And you read it and you read stuff like this about the original disciples and they just complete nincompoops over and over and over again. And why does that grow my faith in the Bible or in God? It's because the Bible is really trying to paint a narrative and illustrate a true story, not give us something that's easy to believe and something where all the original founders are looked on as demigods. You read any other ancient literature of spirituality or any religious thing of other religious or spiritualities, you'll never see their founders painted in a bad light. You'll never see it, but you see it here. You see these 11 guys are just like, over and over again. They're just like a fry short of a happy meal. Something is just not there, right? Of course, I think that one day I'm going to go to heaven and those guys are waiting up there for me. They're like... The 12 of them are up there, or 11 of them, they're up there right now, they're going, dude, I'm waiting for you. You've been talking trash on us for decades. You couldn't have done any better. Yeah, I'm sorry. Please forgive me, Andrew. I'm sorry. Absolutely. Now, that's one side. Here's the other thing, though. I think, and this is just opinion, I think that as Peter stands up, when he stands up in that boat, he's sending a message, I want to rise above where the average person is. I want to rise above where I was. And when he starts to move, I have to believe, as he steps over, those guys are murmuring behind him. Peter, yes, yes, go. That is the master. That is him. Yes, go do that. I believe they had his back. I believe there was encouragement that was coming from behind, that was pushing him forward and taking him to a new place. And you and I need that. If we're to go to any new place, we cannot do it on our own. This myth of the American rugged individualist is exactly that. That is a myth. There is no rugged individualist that does anything of significance. There's not. One is too small of a number for greatness. You and I need community. We need to be around people. And so Peter answers them in verse 28. Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And he said, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. My goodness. Third big idea. Bravery requires direction. Bravery requires direction. When you get in a community, it will always be risky. When you get around people, you have the opportunity to be hurt. When you get around people, you have the opportunity to be misunderstood. When you get around people, you have the opportunity for people to understand your stuff and gossip about you. When you get around people, that's all true, and that's all happened to me. That's all happened to me. And yet, I want to have people in my community who are part of the place where I work. It's very unusual for pastors to have their closest friends in the church where they are, because people find out about your stuff and then you don't look all that good anymore. Most of the time, pastors have all their friends outside of the church to sort of save that, but that's not brave for me. That's not having a life that's together. I want people in my community who are in my life through and through, and that takes bravery to do that because I have a direction of getting to God and I need my friends and all my stuff. I need to handle all the risks of that. Peter, when he steps out of the boat, he has a place where he's going. He's going to Jesus. He's going to the master who is calling him out on the boat. It's really important to understand that Peter, over and over and over and over and over again, we know him because over and over and over again, he does the brave thing. I'm going to talk about this in a few weeks. It's fascinating to me. All the things that Peter does in his life, where he's always the first, where he's always the one who takes the brave step. I mean, it's a regular thing. And we'll look at his stuff that he does and we'll think, oh, it's stupid when you did that. But guess what he's doing? Something. He's doing something. He's stepping. He's doing something. He's saying things when no one wants to say things. He's taking a sword and whacking off an ear off a Roman guard who's wanting to arrest Jesus when everybody else is kind of sitting back. He's stepping out of the boat. He's always got this bias to action. He's always got this deal. And this is why Jesus seems to like him so much. Why he seems to use him so much. But be very clear. Peter's not fearless. When we thought about this journey, we thought about calling it fearless. It was actually the placeholder name for it. But we said, no, it's not going to be fearless because fearless is not the same as being brave. To be fearless is to be missing neural connectors in your brain. That's what being fearless. To be fearless is to have an addiction towards adrenaline. To be fearless can be, I don't value my life because nothing much is going on in my life, so I'll just take stupid risks. Fearlessness and bravery. Bravery is when you have a place you know you want to go and you've got to push forward even though you have fear because there's a direction, there's a goal. Fearless is just like stupid stuff just because it's like, oh, I have no fear. I like to ride bikes, motorcycles. I put on a motorcycle a year, I don't know, 15, 20,000 miles on a bike a year. A number of years ago, all those miles were all without a helmet. I didn't have a helmet on at all when I would ride. I know people called me stupid. Perhaps I was / am, but there actually was a point to it. I want to get in my motorcycle philosophy with you right now. There actually was a point to that. Now, though, if I'm doing 15, 20,000 miles a year, 95% of those miles are with a helmet. And it's actually... I wasn't looking for affirmation, but thank you very much. Yeah, thank you for that. The helmet actually is on for a specific purpose and I don't want to get in my home blindfold. All I'm saying is this. Really, even if you see me without a helmet, I'm not fearless. I might take some risks that some people don't, but really, I'm not fearless. Fearless is, like I said, when you're just like trying to do stupid stuff to do stupid stuff, you're just trying to get a thrill. Like I'll take my bike through West Virginia. It's a beautiful state to ride in. And there's this one bridge that is over these two hillsides. I think it's the largest or longest span bridge in the United States. And when I go through over this bridge, I'll often like be looking over to the guardrail going, oh my gosh, I'm like shivering in my timbers. I'm going down. And then I'll realize that once a year, this bridge, they have bungee jumping on this bridge. And they shut down half of it. And if you want to bungee jump, you can come and you can jump off of this bridge and just have a great old time. I will never bungee jump. I'm going to tell you right now, I will never. You need to be fearless to do bungee jumping. I'm not fearless. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with you bungee jumping. Maybe you're missing some neural connectors. I don't know. But I'm not saying there's anything wrong with you bungee jumping. All I'm saying is that's not brave. For me, there's no point to it. There's no direction. Like, why would I do that? Because I want my testicles in my throat? I don't understand what I get out of that. I don't want that either, actually. My point is this. Peter gets out of the boat. He risks going someplace he hasn't gone before because there's a point, there's a direction he's going. You know, of all the times Peter's been on a boat, and it's been a lot of times, he's got his own boat, he's got his own boating business, he's a professional fisherman, he probably has multiple boats, he's been out there more times than you and I can imagine, and he has never, ever gotten out of a perfectly good boat to try to walk on water. That has never, ever happened for him. He's not fearless. He has never, ever, 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 ever in a storm, once he's gotten everything battened down and everything tied up, ever decided to just stand up and walk around and in the boat, let alone outside of the boat. He's never done that before at all. That would be risky. That'd be a thrill. That'd be a rush. He's never done that before. There's a point to why he's doing it right now. The point is there's God. God is there. God is inviting him. God is calling him out. Bravery always has direction. So you're going to be learning this week. You're going to go to get your Crossroads Anywhere app. If you don't have it already, go to the Apple Store, the Google Store. If you already have the Crossroads Anywhere app, update it, because on that app is all Brave content. And we're going to walk you through figuring out what your direction is, what your heading is that you're going to need to be brave. This is not some general study about bravery. We want to get brave in a specific thing that God is calling you to and God is wooing you to. So you're going to find a heading. I had a heading last year that was very helpful for me. This year, just examples. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be this year. I'm going to do the work this week and figure it out. But two that I'm thinking of, I'll just kind of just get it going with you. One is personal and one is professional. About inside of the last week, a guy texted me who I didn't really know until Man Camp, got to really get to know him a bit better at Man Camp. And his name is PJ. He said, "Hey, man, I think you should..." Just my opinion, I think you should really start trying to find your biological parents. He's one of two people in the last year, roughly the same age as me, two people in the last year have had stories I know of finding their biological parents, specifically their dads. And it was like a challenge, like maybe you should do that. You know, if I did that, that would be a heading. I would need to be brave to do that. Now, if you're not adopted, you go, "What do you mean? I was adopted at birth." If you're not adopted, you go, "What do you mean? Why would that be bravery? I mean, of course, that'd be cool. That'd be awesome." Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, I know the fantasy of finding what your biological parents could be like. Maybe they got a lot of money and I'll buy more motorcycles. I understand all that philosophy, but no, it's really, at least where I'm sitting now, it's not. It's rough. Why is that? Well, number one, my relational bucket's pretty full right now. I don't know that I want like more relationships, especially more significant ones. Like, what happens at Christmas now? Now I got someone else to visit? Now I got this, and I go, "Oh gosh." What if I find, it'd be fun to find mental history, and then what if I find out if like my dad, just what happens in our line is everyone like dies at 50. They're just like, bam, dead. And like, I'm already on borrowed time. My sister is adopted. She found her birth mother, and I won't speak for her. I won't give her story, but I'm just saying, looking in on that, what she went through and what was happening, I was like, man, that brought a massive, massive level of complication that I don't necessarily want to. Now, what am I doing right now? I'm trying to justify why I should stay in the boat of where I am. What am I doing, right? You hear it? Hear what's going on? I don't know if that's what God wants me to do or not, but all I know is if I did do that, that'd be bravery, and I have more than enough reasons to stay in the boat where I am right now. So I'm considering that as a heading. Another one, professionally, I know that a lot of us, this is coming up, this series on Brave and Small Group, you're like, oh my gosh, whoa, this is intense. I understand that. And part of the reason why some of us are sort of surprised by this is we announce so many things at Crossroads, you're not sure how to filter out what's important and what isn't important. Crossroads has been going for 20 years, and for the most part over 20 years, we've just started and grown things. Started whatever, started journeys, started just over and over, man camp, woman camp, 4,000 women wanted to get into woman camp signups this last week. It was sold out in 10 seconds. 10 seconds, five, that's great unless you're one of the 3,500 people or whatever who couldn't get in. I mean, it's awesome, but woman camp, I just don't want to start naming all our things, but we announced so many things here at Crossroads that the average person, average one of us just goes, oh, Brave, Small, yeah, whatever. It just kind of goes over our head. And I'm sensing that, all right, instead of just starting things or growing things at Crossroads, maybe I'm coming into a place professionally where I need to start re-engineering things. Maybe there's things that need to be eliminated. And I was like, ooh, no, I don't want to do that. Especially when things are going good. There's no signs that we have to do that, but it's like, oh, maybe that would make people upset with me. That might change that. So I'm thinking about that, something like that. There's others too, but I don't know what it is for you. I don't know what it is, but I promise you there's some place God wants to take you. I know there is. I know there is. Jesus doesn't come up and just sit in the boat with them and say, I just want to be where you are right now. Jesus comes up and calls them to a new place, calls them to places where they weren't already. Fourth and last point, bravery. Bravery leads to the hand of God. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Peter's out on the other side. He's like, he's ready. He's looking at Jesus and he's like, now I can just imagine, probably puts one foot out while he's still holding here. Okay. Takes another step, and what do you know? He takes a couple steps out, and all of a sudden, again, he realizes he's never been here before. This is brand new territory for him. And so what does he do? He's because Jesus called him, and he's going out to, all of a sudden, he's like, well, there's wind out here. There's waves. See, when he's back hunkered down in the boat with the sides, he's not experiencing the wind and the waves like he is now. Now he's out exposed. And now stuff is buffeting him all around. And he starts to look around and notice it and get a little freaked out. And he starts to sink. And he says this short prayer, Lord, save me. Lord, help me. And Jesus reaches out his hand and picks him up and elevates him. When I used to tell this story, I used to use this as an opportunity to pick on Peter. Well, look at poor Peter, you know, he goes out and he just looks at the wind and the waves, and he sinks. I mean, he just shouldn't look at the wind. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. But guess what? At least he was going somewhere. At least he was walking. Do we really think Jesus is all upset? He notices that he doubts. He notices he's taking his eyes off him. But we really think Jesus is upset that he's somebody who's going, being called out to something, who's trying something different, who's going to a new place? Not only that, when he sinks, because he's being brave, because he has a heading, he gets to feel the very hand of God. He gets to have the very hand of God lift him up. Forget about the sinking. If you want to be elevated, you're going to need the hand of God to elevate you. And the hand of God comes to those who are brave. The hand of God does not come to those who are passive. The hand of God does not come to those who are sitting in the boat. The hand of God does not come to people who want the same old and have validated what they're doing right now. No. Read the whole Bible, the whole thing. The hand of God only and always comes to people who are going the way of God, who are wanting to be brave, who are moving. The hand of God does not come to the passive. It doesn't. And yet those of us who are passive is going, why doesn't God make me happy? Why is this going wrong? Get out of the freaking boat. Get moving where God is. Get moving where God wants you to go. They get back in the boat, and the verse says this, and when they got into the boat, they, Jesus, so now Jesus does come into the boat. He comes into the boat because someone got out of the boat. He comes into your normal mundane life because you got out of your mundane life. When they got into the boat, Jesus and Peter, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you're the Son of God." So the point of all this is they see, truly, you are the Son of God. And we see now that Jesus is truly the Son of God based on this. But check this out. When they get in the boat, the wind ceased. Wind ceases now. Possible that God caused the wind to happen at a time? I don't know. All I know is this. There was a problem. There was a major problem that out of this problem, Jesus and Peter got close. Out of this problem, the disciples had spiritual clarity on the identity of Jesus. It was out of this problem. You and I are different than disciples. Disciples are now thankful for this problem. This problem has elevated them spiritually, all of them. They've seen this. This problem is, you and I, we have any problems, we're immediately like, "God, there's not a God. He doesn't love me. He's not good." Let's think about this for a minute. When someone cares about you, they give you a problem. Our teachers in school, believe it or not, cared about us. They wanted us to advance in our education. And what did they do? They gave us problems. A guy has 5 oranges. Each orange is 20 cents. He sells them for 10 cents, but has to take a bus fare for $2.50. How much? Slow down. If it wasn't for the giving of problems, we wouldn't learn anything in school. And if it wasn't for the problems that we have in our life, whether they come from God or whether they come from some other source, we wouldn't be able to grow spiritually. Our problems can often be a sign that God is thinking about you and he cares about you. He's aware of you. He's forming you right now. He's developing you. And he wants you to come to a place where you say, "Truly, truly, you are the Son of God, and truly, you've taken me to a new place." Jesus, I pray that you take us to a new place. Us as a church and us as individuals. There are things that I know are going to change spiritually in our lives. Things that are going to change relationally, occupationally, financially. God, I know that these things are going to change, not just because you're going to all of a sudden do something about it, but because you're looking to see who comes to you on the water. Let's do our first little personal exercise, just processing what our heading might be. What might our heading be? God, we want to listen to you. If you're calling us to something, put that thought in our mind right now.
I will listen, listen, listen for the Lord. I will listen, listen, listen for the Lord. His voice is quiet, but his voice is clear. I will listen, listen, listen.
God, we want to listen. Is there an addiction that needs to be finally eliminated and where you need to step out? Is there a new relational habit that needs to form? Is there a new diet? Is there a new business? God, call us. Give us direction.
I will listen, listen. Listen, listen for the Lord. His voice is quiet, but his voice is clear. I will listen, listen, listen for the Lord.
So the other day I was working out. And there's this vet who's in there from the Iraqi war who is obviously a vet. He's got the scars and missing parts that show that he is definitely has some casualty of war with him. And I bump into him and talking, so I was we were at the same thing, and I was talking to him. He told me about this thing he was doing with this anti-suicide thing amongst veterans, trying to start this thing to keep people who have PTSD from killing themselves and all this kind of stuff. And I said, dude, you need to be in my brave group, my small group. I'm starting with people I don't know. I don't know you very well. You ought to be in that. So I don't know if he's going to do it or not, but I've extended out to him. I know it was a brave step for me to even ask him that, because if he says no, then I feel rejection, right? But I know that he's got some stuff that can add value to my life, and I got some stuff that may add value to his life. So I reached out to him. I just want to encourage us, just do the brave thing and reach out to people and allow others to reach out to us to have the power of a communal support to go through this. So David's going to come up on stage right now and tell us exactly how to do that.
Hey guys, let's give it up. Wasn't that an awesome way to start Brave? Yeah, thank you, Brian, for sharing. Like, he actually has his own Brave group and inviting people into it. And I just wanted to kind of reiterate some of the things that he was saying. You know, yeah, he's our pastor, and yeah, he kind of has to encourage you to do a Brave group, right? But as somebody who went through Brave last year, and as one of the thousands of people who are doing this with you this year, I really want to encourage you, if you're going to get the most out of this journey, you are going to need to be in a Brave group. Because it's that Brave group, guys, that makes this thing so powerful, that gives this whole journey its impact, right? So if you are not in a group, please use the tool. It's super easy. It's at crossroads.net/brave. Just go on there, and it's a really, really simple way to find some people to get in community with over the next 5 weeks and see your life radically changed. Actually, I'll do you one better. You can go right across the atrium immediately after I'm done talking, and you can go to meeting room A or B. And there are people right now in person where you can go find out about different groups and sign up for one. Now, say you do both of those things and you still don't find a group that's right for you. That might be good, because that's God probably calling you to start your own group with people that identify with you. And we need that. There are still thousands of people who are actively trying to get connected into a group, and we need more hosts. We need more people like you to step up, take a brave step, and get more groups started and facilitate this experience for other people. You don't have to be a spiritual guru. You don't have to be on staff here. You don't have to, like, be an expert. They let me do it. If that tells you anything, you know, all you have to do is have a pulse and, you know, have a place where people can come together and meet. That could be in your home. That could be at Starbucks. That could be out here in the atrium. You know, grab a couch. Just do something and step up and facilitate this for other people. Now, whether you're going to be a host or whether you're going to be in a group, everybody is going to need to make sure that you download the app. And I want to clear up some things. That's not the Brave app from last year. It is the Crossroads Anywhere app. From the App Store or in Google Play, just go in there, get Crossroads Anywhere. If you already had it from before, make sure that you update it so that you get all of the current information. This is going to be your tool throughout the next 5 weeks to stay connected with what happens on the weekend and to walk you through everything that we do as a group. So go get in a group or go start a group, download the app, and let's have an amazing time, guys, over the next 5 weeks being brave. Thanks.
Awesome. Go do it. See ya.